Good evening and welcome to the local news. My name is Lauren Schmidt and I'm joined by my co-host, Lisa Music. Today is Friday, April 26th, and we're coming to you live from the K-Mud studio. We are joined by a panel of guests who are currently either reporting or have been reporting on the ongoing protest on the Cal Poly campus. I want to thank our engineer, Michael McCaskill. I'm currently joined by Ryan Burns of the Lost Coast Outpost, Kelly Lincoln with the K-Mud News Department, Kiana Znika, a.k.a. a Lizard Queen, station manager of KRFH, the student radio LPFM, and Aaron McDonaldson, the California Faculty Association secretary. Thank you all for joining us. First, I want to start with Kiana. Kiana, you have been going nonstop on the student-run radio station. Can you share an overview on what's been unfolding today on the Cal Poly campus?
Yeah, so just today, there's been a lot of different updates. First, starting with the email that was sent out to all students about campus being closed through May 10th. So campus will be closed for the remainder of the semester. I did get screenshots that was submitted to me from a professor within the art, film, and theater department, basically saying that this decision was made by University President Tom Jackson and Chief of Staff Mark Johnson, and that the faculty did not take part in coming to this decision, and they're trying to see what they can do to overturn it. So that was like chronological order. That was one of the updates. And then there was the update of the checkout process opportunity given to students where originally today, Friday, April 26th, from 2 to 4 p.m., students had this window of time to evacuate the Siemens Hall without fear of instant arrest. Again, the alert was saying that that doesn't mean that there would be zero consequences, but it would guarantee no immediate arrest, and they would have to go to one of two meeting locations that was specified in this update, and they would have to basically provide basic identity information such as their name, phone number, student ID number. And then there was another, once 4 o'clock came around, and I spoke with you earlier, it was very much clear that the student protesters did not want to agree to this offer. I got another source telling me that maybe like around two students did take this offer, but for the most part, the students were not coming to any of these meeting locations. I had student DJs confirming this to me. The school did extend this timeline until 5 o'clock, but as we know, it's around 6 o'clock and there remains an occupation on campus. Another update is the entrance to Siemens Hall, the building being occupied. Siemens Hall is open now. Barricade has been taken down, but the student protesters are making it clear that this in no way is them giving up. This is just allowing more people to participate in the occupation.
Copy that. Ryan, I want to go to you. The Lost Coast Outpost just released footage from inside Siemens Hall. Can you talk about your coverage today?
Well, yeah, we, my colleague Andrew and I were on campus pretty much all day, and there was sort of an air of apprehension among a lot of the students. There have been rumors all day long of an imminent law enforcement action, which has not materialized. But yeah, right at right before 5 p.m., there was one of the student protesters made an announcement that they would be opening up Siemens Hall, and that happened right at 5 p.m. And we walked through, and there's certainly there's been a lot of graffiti on the walls, including in President Jackson's office. But it was also made clear to me that this wasn't in any way an end to the occupation. It was inviting people in, but not giving up their occupation of the building. I also spoke with several students, including a student named Jackie, who has been not an official spokesperson, but a frequent spokesperson. Jackie was among several students who have been notified that they are suspended. And so there has been some repercussions already from the administration. And yeah, also I saw the checkout table that was set up. And as mentioned, well, when it had been up and running for about an hour and a half, I asked them if anybody had taken them up on it, because it seemed to me like a self-narking table. And they said one student had, at that point had checked out. I don't know what the incentive was for that. It seems like documenting your complicity in this activity, which and I also I did speak with Sheriff Hansel briefly. He came onto campus. He didn't want to say much on the record except that he was there to have a dialogue with anybody who wanted to, and not many people took him up. I did see him have one conversation with a couple of students, but he and Under Sheriff Burrow left shortly thereafter.
Yeah, you know, we actually spoke with Sheriff Hansel extremely briefly via text messages, and he stated, quote, "Law enforcement was on scene in support of the university's mission to keep law and order on campus," end quote. You know, that was at 5:17, and so I know, Kiana, you were reporting, you know, folks saying that there was police on campus, but by 5:17, and as indicated by Sheriff Hansel's text, seems more of a past tense situation. I know there was another situation that happened earlier. And Michael, I want to go to a clip in just a second, but in case folks are just tuning in and have been living under a rock since Monday evening, we are here doing a live panel reporting on the Cal Poly Humboldt protest that has been unfolding since Monday evening. Major developments today as the campus announced it would extend its closure through the rest of semester until May 10th, really putting into question celebrations for graduation, amongst other things that have been planned. Students were given an opportunity to self-check out, as you would, and as Ryan described it, self-narking, where you turn in your ID and say, "Hey, I apologize, I'm leaving now." It sounds like only one to two students may have done that. We spoke with students inside today who said, "No, we're not taking that deal. Our demands have not been met." We'll get to those demands in a second. And then the other development being that suspensions were rolled out, and the students on the inside were saying that the students that were selected for the suspension were some of the students that had been working with faculty and administration, and that they may have been targeted for being transparent in these actions. But there was a kind of a shocking development earlier, and we heard it on the student radio station. Michael, would you quickly go to that clip of Cliff Berkowitz?
Okay, so there have been some interesting rumors going out around about Mad River Hospital possibly preparing for a mass casualty event with regard to the protest going on at Cal Poly Humboldt. I called the front desk, and it was immediately transferred to a different phone number, and they actually confirmed that they are preparing for a mass casualty event. I asked them specifically if there was any information that they're going off of. Is there any kind of tip that they were given? They said no. They said they're just being overly cautious with regard to the events going on at the university. They just want to be prepared. So,
I see. Okay.
Not to add a panic to anybody that they got any kind of tip off, but indeed they are preparing just in case.
Okay, so it is fair and accurate to say that Mad River Hospital is preparing for...
They are preparing, but again, it's not due to some kind of a tip-off that something is going down. I think they were, you know, they're aware of, you know, what happened with the riot police when they were called in, and they're prepared that they want to be prepared in case it escalates even further. The fact that they are preparing just means that they're just doing their due diligence, basically. I also asked them about the rumors that some personnel were being sent home in preparation for this event, and he confirmed it. He said, yes, there are people being sent home. I asked him why, and he said, in preparations like this, they basically send home staff that they feel will be, like, redundant or not necessary, so they can and actually put the hospital into lockdown where they have only one point of entry. It actually kind of was making me a little bit nervous talking with him about this. And I asked him again, I said, are you preparing for this off of any kind of tip that you have gotten? They said, no, we're just being overly cautious. We're just preparing for the worst case scenario.
Yeah, we would later also speak with the CFO, and that's just a 30-second clip. Michael, if you could go to the CFO of Mad River Hospital.
My name's Sean Nordquist. I'm at Mad River Community Hospital. I'm the CFO here. And I was just answering your question about us going preparing for the possibility of a mass casualty event. We've gone into our incident command process, and we're just being overly prepared. We're obviously hoping for a peaceful resolution and for everybody to be safe, but just in case something happens, we want to be prepared. So
it does seem like you might be under the impression that there is going to be a police action today. Can you clarify?
So all we know is what we've seen on the news, that it sounds like they've given the protesters the opportunity to exit the building before 4 p.m., so we started this process at 4 p.m. just to be overly prepared. But no, we've not gotten any tip-off or anything in association.
So you are not in contact with the police?
Not to my knowledge, not currently, no.
Great. Anything else the public should know?
No, I think that's it.
As your family gets back...
Okay, so that was the CFO of Mad River Hospital clarifying that they've been seeing the coverage on the news, seeing this self-checkout option that's been on the table, hearing the rumors of police presence. So they kind of self-initiated, according to the CFO. Aaron, I want to go to you. Remind our listeners who you are and just share the emotions you currently have as the California Faculty Association Secretary, seeing this unfold.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm Aaron Donaldson. I have taught in the Department of Communication Studies since the fall of 2015, and I'm the chapter secretary for our union. This started in my life when the helicopter showed up. My seven-year-old noticed there was a large helicopter outside of our house, and pretty much from that point until now, like the rest of the folks on campus, I've just been very concerned, very worried about the safety of our students. When I arrived, the police were already surrounding the building. There were quite a few people, a very large turnout of people that were arguing very convincingly, I think, that they needed to leave. They left, as I'm sure y'all were reporting, around 11:15 or so. And that was just a real wild moment for those of us there to see police turn around and leave in response to nonviolent protests. That was just a very hopeful moment for me. Throughout all of this, I've been listening to the coverage that folks like Kiana have been doing. I just on air really want to emphasize that that work has been really important. And from the very beginning, as I'm sure we all know, students have been kind of leading the education here. And as a teacher, I think that that's a very powerful moment. It's a moment when you stop and you realize that you know, all education obviously is a two-way street. And right now, nationwide, folks are saying it's time for all of us to sit down and have a very serious conversation about what's going on. And it's been a real roller coaster. We've been keeping up to speed on what's going on with the CFA, doing the best we can to show our solidarity within that capacity. We had an incredible teach-in. The text thread that I'm getting now is saying pretty much what y'all are saying, which is that the building is now open. This is so wonderful for me to hear. And I just hope that we continue to show restraint. I think that nationwide, we're seeing a police crackdown. And at Cal Poly Humboldt, after that first response, so far, wiser heads have prevailed. And I hope that that continues.
Absolutely. And we have a KMUD reporter, Kelly Lincoln. She also writes for The Independent. Kelly, are you with us? And can you talk about where you are and what you're seeing?
Yeah, I am here. I'm right next to the library. I got out of the main quad. It's very calm. It's very peaceful. People are now, when I arrived at around 3 o'clock, then people were sort of lounging around but then as it get to be more 4 o'clock, then everybody started standing up and the energy shifted. When I arrived, I spoke with the dean of students, Mitch Mitchell, and he said that one of the things I remember most that he said is that it's problematic, some of the speech. He quoted that from the river to the sea has been deemed hate speech, and so when the kids sing that, it's deemed hate speech. When the building opened up, I walked through, was a little it was a little heartbreaking in there. There's a lot of graffiti, but it's also not smashed up. The president's office has been gone through, but the worst of the vandalism that we had heard about is not in there, and his collection of art and artifacts were in good shape. The table had a lot of writing, but it was on a glass cover. I was tracking the provost for a while, and she was just looking at all the damage, and she was doing pretty good for a while, and then all of a sudden she was in tears, and so I didn't track her anymore after that. I was going to interview her. And I spoke with the dean of humanities, I believe, and he was very supportive of the students. He said that the main thing that would really make a big difference for the university would be if Siemens Hall would be left open and not barricaded. But as we were speaking, the barricades were going up on all the doors except that upper quad door. Mm-hmm.
Aaron is
saying, and that's all I have for you.
Yeah, no, Aaron, do you want to share what you just shared in our chat?
That the CFA folks that I have that are there are saying that one of the reasons CAPS may be so upset is that the students saw her and the dean there and were shouting, admin, go home, admin, go home, and that it was confrontational, not very comfortable. For whatever it's worth, I think that, you know, that emotional response and obviously the graffiti, I think all of that is interesting and newsworthy. But one of the big problems that a lot of people have is that Tom Jackson in particular has been very, very absent. The CFA has covered that he got a $40,000 raise in addition to all of the money that he already makes to be president. And that's not seen when you walk into that office. Like, people will focus on the graffiti and the writing on the glass table, and I guess that makes sense. But like, all of that is inconsequential compared to someone who's making $40,000 additional dollars this year, and they're not present. They're not here. They're not leading their community. They're not having the conversations that are taking place in the building where their office is located. Just as someone who studies media, it's important for me to put that in context.
Aaron, the CFA passed a vote of no confidence in President Jackson. That was earlier this week. I know Kiana and K-Mud were trying to break the news on that. Can you just share a little more background on that vote?
We suggested it in our statement of solidarity as soon as we put it out. I don't know the timeline, but Jim Walglum, the Senate president, is the one that put this thing together, so far as I understand it. Turned it around very quickly. The quorum needed was like 80. We had over 170 faculty there. There was like maybe 10 votes against in the initial count that I heard before that was qualified. And frankly, it was a long time coming. And it seems like there's similar feeling for Provost Capps, frankly, that the leadership has just failed the institution in many capacities. And with Tom Jackson in particular, the key was to call the cops. That was something that the faculty there uniformly were rejecting. We felt like it harmed our students and harmed our community. And that was a big part of what motivated that.
Kiana, Kelly.
Can I interrupt? Yeah, I want to sort of echo what he said about the salary. Because the Dean of Humanities, when we were speaking, said that one of the big problems is that the university is short on its budget, and that, you know, repairing these damages was going to be, you know, costly and for the university budget. And so when we hear about, you know, one person's salary, it's reflective of what we see in our economic culture wide around.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we had an opportunity to speak with President Jackson when he was first onboarding with Cal Poly Humboldt, and have since reached out for other things and have not had much luck. The Lumberjack, El Lenador have reported similar things. Ryan, with the Los Cos Outpost, you're shaking your head. Can you talk about the relationship you've had as a member of the press with Cal Poly Humboldt and just kind of summarize the experience between that and then what's currently unfolding in your coverage?
Well, you know, the university has a marketing and communications office. And frankly, I feel a bit bad for the people who work there because I think they get hung out to dry quite a bit. They get put in a position where they have to answer, you know, questions that really should be answered by administrators. Yeah, I have put in a request earlier this week to interview President Jackson, and I didn't hear back. I did see that the Time Standard was granted an interview with him. They published a story earlier today. And so I'm not sure why some media is given that access while other media is not. And it seems like, you know, he should be more present. And I mean, just that's been the opinion expressed by faculty in the vote yesterday, as well as students who are on the quad today, is he seems to be MIA.
Absolutely. Kiana, I want to go to you. I mean, you have been doing just excellent coverage on KRFN, the student radio station there, LPFM. Really just sharing up to the minute. I know a lot of folks might be tuned into KMA now, but after the news, they're going to go right back to KRFN. What has your this experience been like for you? How are you tracking this? KRFH. Sorry about that. That's my bad. KRFH. What has this been like for you, and how do you currently understand the situation? I mean, it's... I believe you were saying that you could literally be put off the air at any time because this closure, campus closure, affects you. You know, you're a student, you're the station manager at the radio station. If you just want to share your thoughts and reflections on this.
Yeah, so I'll speak to the second part of that, which is us being at the risk of being shut down. So we did have to negotiate our, like, negotiate with, you know, Dean Jeff Crane and Shawnee Young to be here. We reached an agreement. But some of the recent updates has been Gist Hall has been granted to student media. So the other student publications are in here now. That's El Lenador and the Lumberjack. But when I say that we have to be careful with what we say on air, is, you know, at least with like print publication, you can write something, you have people checking it, you're reading it over and over again, and then you get to release that and you're making sure that, you know, you've had multiple eyes on it, making sure you're not spreading misinformation, making sure that you're being as non-biased as possible. On radio, you know, it's very easy to just spill your opinion. It's very easy to, I'm getting mass reports, like our DMs are going crazy, and sometimes I'll be talking and then trying to read a report, and then I have to stop myself from talking because I'm realizing that this could incite fear. And there's not necessarily, like, there's a lot of quote, multiple sources confirmed, end quote, but I'm like, who are these sources? And honestly, like, I'm gonna be so for real, like, it's like, I believe you guys, I'm believing you, but I, as a journalist, like, I want to protect myself and I want to protect the station. So right now, like, with my experience, again, it is a very small team of us. And the journalists who are a part of KRFH, they're doing stuff with El Lenador. They're doing stuff with the Lumberjack. They're very focused on their print publication. So as of right now, it's only me and one other person who are actually journalism majors. And so we've had the training to do this. Some of my other DJs who have received press passes, they're history majors, but they're doing excellent. Like, most of my team is like history and art majors right now. We have theater majors doing the work of like hard hitting reporting right now. And I keep emphasizing this fact, and I say it on air a lot too. You do not have to join a journalism class to be a journalist. You do not have to declare yourself a journalism major or journalism minor to be a journalist. A lot of what people are doing right now on social media is objectively journalism. And like, I have been pushing this for my whole time being here at Humble, where it's like social media news is valid. Citizen journalism is valid. And, you know, obviously, like, there could be that spread of misinformation, but that's anywhere. And, you know, as long as we're talking about it and practicing discernment and like spreading this awareness that we should always be checking sources and taking things with a grain of salt. So that's that on that. My experience with this, I honestly feel like this is what I'm meant to be doing. So I have been like spending hours in the booth, but honestly, like, I don't mind spending hours in the booth. If anything, I have to remind myself to take breaks and to, you know, drink water, eat food. But I don't want to say that I'm enjoying doing this, but I do not mind doing this. Like, I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And this is my way that I can help the community. And again, it's not just me. We have a team of other DJs who are out there in the field and who are like very heavily involved in the chat. So again, I just want to give a shout out to those DJs and shout out to all the community members and shout out to you guys, everyone who's been sending me updates and stuff, because again, I'm in the booth. I have no idea, and I have to be in the booth. So I need eyes and ears.
Hi. Actually, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you know, yeah. Ryan, actually, we're going to be going over time, and it is 6:28. You're tuned into this live edition of the K-Mud Local News. Ryan, you said you have to go out, so I just want to give you a moment to share your final thoughts as we continue to go over on this live newscast.
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier that there was a sense of apprehension on campus today. And I think when Siemens Hall was opened up, there was a big exhale generally. And it seems like there has been a bit of a release of tension. There have been some, you know, indirect indicators that law enforcement doesn't have any immediate plans to repeat what they did on Monday night. So I think that's a positive sign. I think that was most people agree that that was a mistake and did not look good for the university.
Thank you, Ryan. And so that was Ryan Burns at the Lost Coast Outpost. They just posted on social media a walkthrough of Siemens Hall as the hall has been open. However, the protest has not ended. We're going to let you go, Ryan, and we're going to stay with Kiana, Aaron, and Kelly. If you'll be with us, I do want to remind the listeners, this is KMUD. My name is Lauren Schmidt. I'm joined by
Lisa Music.
And we are conducting a live Cal Poly Humboldt protest update version of the local news. Major developments today are the campus will now be closed through the semester. That's May 10th. Multiple protesters were given suspension notices, and the school offered a quote-unquote checkout option where they gave folks 2 hours to leave and not be, quote, immediately arrested, although it did not offer 100% amnesty. That checkout option was extended to 5 p.m. And now we're kind of in a waiting period to see what comes next. Lisa, right before the bottom of the hour, you had a question. I want to go back to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to, again, reiterate Lizard Queen has been holding it down. She has been our source on campus. And as a journalist, we really appreciate you and we celebrate what you're doing at the radio there. Also, what we've noticed, and I've heard you speak about on air, is this agreement to, you know, do what journalists do, which is to keep an even-keeled reporting, make sure that what you're reporting is factual, verified, as reporters need to do, and a little frustration on the part of the news, the press releases coming out of Cal Poly Humboldt. And this really speaks to me about the division going on. It seems like students, faculty, staff are really, you know, supporting the students' right to protest. A lot of community members are. And then on the other side of this, what we're hearing opposite coming out of that press office, is talking about the vandalism, is talking about risks and the illegality of occupying a building. And then there's calls from the public to really step in and gas students to use force, people celebrating that in a little bit of an alarming way. So we do have very opposing sides, as divisive as the Israel-Palestine war has been. You know, equally, it's just as divided here, even though there seems to be a cohesive unit on campus. Can you speak to that, about the troubles, or, you know, following that and asking everyone to kind of play by the same rules and using factual information?
Yeah. So when you mentioned the press release, that has just been very frustrating to read as a student journalist. And again, I just kept reading those press releases over and over, because, again, I'm basically, stretching myself so thin, trying to be as careful as possible, trying to make sure I have my sources and I'm stating these sources. I'm holding trainings for students who are not journalism majors and who have not had this media training. But the school gets to just say whatever they want without any consequences. Like, they get to claim that the bathrooms aren't working when I have students within Siemens Hall saying, no, the bathrooms are working just fine. There's never been anything wrong. So I was like, why do you get to just make these claims? And I love that I'm here, because obviously, like, on care, well, this is broadcasting on Care Page, but so I guess this is the most opinionated that I've been. But it's so frustrating, because, again, I can get in trouble if I make false claims. Any student can get in trouble, but the school doesn't get in trouble. And it's very obvious that they're setting a tone that these protests are violent, and like, oh, we're concerned for the student's safety. We're concerned for the student's safety. I've been at the quad. The students seem fine. They're like painting and playing music and stuff. I do understand the concern with the barricades, though, like with the fire hazard. Like, that is so valid. Yeah, the press releases and like the saying of like occupying multiple buildings. If anything, I saw posted by the Lumberjack, there was an attempt by like two students trying to get into the student activity center, and the other student protesters shut it down. They told them to get out of there, and they were repeating, this is not about you, this is about Palestine. So there is that, just like that mutual accountability. Like, the students really are not trying to, like, they're not trying to have a party right now. They're not trying to, like, occupy, like, every single building and wreak havoc. And I just, yeah, there's just, again, I'm very much, like, watching my tone and, like, holding these trainings for my other DJs because of how instant radio news is. And so we have to be careful with our tone, be careful with what we're saying. So it's frustrating reading these press releases where it seems like they get to paint any picture that they want, but I can't do the same, because then I'll get in trouble.
You know, and I do want to mention, tonight we reached out to student protesters inside Siemens Hall who were unavailable to comment. We interviewed a student earlier. We'll play that clip after we let you all go. The campus, actually, the university released the list of demands on humboldt.edu/emergency, where it basically listed the demands and listed the university's response. Folks can, again, go online to humboldt.edu/emergency to see all of that information, including the news about the campus closure and this quote-unquote checkout option, which has since ended. That was at 5 o'clock today. I know CFA faculty are standing in support with students. I received a letter earlier today that reads, quote, "Dear Cal Poly Humboldt faculty, student protesters request that faculty, staff, and any community members come to the campus immediately if you are comfortable and willing. It is planned that this group will create a ring around the protesters and occupied buildings when there is an immediate threat of police violence. Be aware that there is a risk of arrest with your participation. Please engage non-violently and all respects in solidarity." Erin, go ahead,
can
Kelly.
I add to that?
Yeah.
When I was speaking with the when I was speaking with the humanities dean, then he indicated that the sheriff had come uninvited, and he indicated that the university's not in a big rush to arrest people. It's very calm at this time.
Oh, Aaron, you want to respond?
Well, I really want to echo what Kiana was saying about how frustrating the reports and the statements were. They're saying it's a volatile situation, and they said it's like a dangerous situation. And I was trained to be a club director. I direct the debate club there. And there's something called the Clery Act that we follow, where if there's a risk, we have to report it. And they have to give us clear information about who, what, when, where. Like, there's a person who robbed someone, and they look like this. And they're not giving us any of that. They're just saying it's volatile, but that's not a clear risk. And it's odd for it to be volatile and dangerous, and then for them to say they're not at a rush to arrest a bunch of people. That seems to contradict a lot of that vocabulary there that seems to be emphasizing the risk of arrest and seems to be emphasizing those things. And just personally, I would say that, you know, as a rhetorician, it's frustrating to see that kind of vague language. But I really want to echo that I think it seems to be like a separate standard, that the university expects us to have a very clear statement of risk and who's involved and who's responsible. But in this particular instance, it can be very, very vague. I don't know. I think that the contribution in terms of elevating the potential risks from that language can be pretty significant.
You know, something we don't see every day is the police leaving a protest. That was what happened on Monday. You know, there was a violent encounter inside Siemens Hall. The police would then leave. However, arrests and injuries did occur. And then they stood outside the hall, kind of blocking that entrance. Another kind of separate protest would ensue, people supporting the people inside. You know, the chant was de-escalate by leaving. They did just that. What is your response to that? I mean, we at all of these other college campuses, I mean, we are seeing kind of the opposite. Enforcement is increasing. What does that say about this movement?
Well, I call myself a lousy optimist. I did not expect that. I was there. I had spent several hours arguing with the sheriff's office folks, trying to get them to leave, telling them that they weren't helping. They tolerated it all pretty well, but what they didn't do was leave until they were ordered to do that. And finally, they did. It you know, it felt miraculous at the moment. It gave me a little bit of hope. It gave me some hope that folks could realize that it, you know, can be de-escalated and that it doesn't take a violent response to meet violence. I think the internet is ablaze with the water jug image, and I just want to emphasize how disproportionate that is. You've got police officers with batons and shields and flak jackets and the full weight of authority coming through that door, and everyone's fixated on this water jug. And as a pacifist, to me, it is such a beautiful symbol of we will protect ourselves and each other, but we're not here to fight. And the people on the other side were there to fight. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what they're trained to do. And rather than have a fight, they left. And I'm not, like, the New York Times was at our teach-in and they interviewed me, but they did not cover the teach-in or the fact that we de-escalated. They're covering all the arrests. They're covering all the people, like, all that. That all makes for great news. But K-Mud has been here with us telling the story of de-escalation. And that's really important to us because I think it's a huge victory. And the community response was on both sides. There were hundreds of people there trying to get between the police and the protesters when it started. The same number of people showed up this evening from what I'm seeing on the photos. There were a lot of people there willing to put themselves between the cops and the students. It means a lot to me to see that in our community. I know our campus can feel very divisive sometimes, but that kind of show of solidarity gave me a lot of good feelings.
And we are over time, so I appreciate you both so much. I do want to keep you on long enough to share your final thoughts. Kiana, thank you again. You've kind of been the voice on the ground on campus. Our engineer is clapping from the studio. You can't see him, but we all have appreciated your coverage, your collaboration. I mean, this is the spirit of community, and this is why I love community radio and all of our little stations networking together. You know, we're stronger together, informed communities, a safe community. So on behalf of all of us, thank you so much. Kiana, I want to let you take this moment to share any final words and any message you think the listeners of KRFH and KMUD should know.
Again, just thank you so much for just the words of kindness and support. Like, it really does mean a lot. Like, it validates our work. It shows, like, just that we're supported. Like, we are working really, really hard to be here. And in KRFH, we haven't had to do anything to this extent yet. So we have people who are just learning about media training, just like starting on like Tuesday. And this is very new to a lot of people. And it's not like, this is just a very intense situation too. So honestly, the positive feedback that we've gotten from the community means a lot to us. And I would just encourage everyone, to anybody, like, if you're thinking something nice about someone, definitely let them know. I've definitely cried a lot of tears of joy here. And yeah, and again, even though it's mainly my voice that you're hearing, this is I just want to really emphasize, this is a team effort. Like, I have DJs who are bringing me food, who have also been in the station 8+ hours, going back and forth from the quad, you know, risking their own safety and risking their own chance for arrest. We like just now barely got press passes made. So this has been a team effort. It is a small team of us, but we really appreciate all the positive feedback that we've been getting. So thank you so much.
And folks can tune in to krfh.net. You're also on the dial in Arcata as a low power FM. What is kind of your window of bringing the live updates?
Right now, it's mostly when I'm available. So, like, I'm not going to lie, like, today, I let myself sleep in a little bit because I've been so the station kind of opens up when I come in, but we don't have any set schedule right now. We're trying to work that out amongst ourselves. Like, I've been talking to Cliff Berkowitz, our advisor, and we're trying to see how we could possibly stay here for 24 hours. I might possibly be spending the night here in the station. And I don't mind doing that, honestly. And it really helps that I have DJs who can at least like take over for me when I have to eat, or I've been like forcing myself to take breaks to go like touch grass and stuff. But yeah, we really are trying to be here as long as we can. It's just hard because we have such a small team.
You're doing a great job and playing great music, I might add. That's at krfh.net, folks. Please check them out. It has been absolutely incredible, and we hope to continue the collaboration. Aaron, I want to go to you again. Aaron McDonaldson, the California Faculty Association Secretary. What are your final thoughts, just reflecting on this moment, this movement?
Just going to keep it short and sweet. It's just a real honor to be a member of this community, from the students to the union to the faculty to the radio community doing great work here. It just means a lot to me to see people come together about this. Again, I feel kind of isolated and lonely up there on the campus a lot, and we don't want lots of protests like this, but it's a moment where the community came together, and that was really inspiring for me. And the most important message of all is that nonviolence is power.
Right on. Thank you both so much. And Kelly, I believe you're still with us. If you want to share your final message, you know, covering this since day one, Monday evening.
Well, little here, little there. I have a slow memory, and I'm remembering that the last thing that the Dean of Humanities said is that the students are working with, and they are negotiating with, administration. Some of the leaders are in Nelson Hall. They're repainting, and he was very impressed with them for putting together the teach-ins, for all the kind of coordination and on-the-ground life work, which is kind of what I was hearing the journalist from K Radio Free Humboldt, I have to do it out loud like that, talk about. So this is a growing experience for many people, and I'm kind of impressed by that.
Before we close out, I want to go to an interview I did earlier today with a protester inside of Siemens Hall.
I'm Casey, and I'm part of the occupation that is happening at Cal Poly Humboldt right now in Siemens and Nelson Hall. So the university sent out an email saying essentially that if you wish to leave campus in a safe and secure manner, that you can go between the hours of 2 and 4, present your name, address, ID, and then not be faced with immediate arrest. So essentially, no promises are made, and they want people to turn themselves in. No one is taking that deal. What they're trying to do is create a divide in the movement here so that it can fight amongst itself and divide, and then we can be pacified by the administration. It's a form of trying to put a wedge between this movement, making it less effective than we are as a group who have multiple opinions, and trying to say, oh, you can go do this if you so wish, and putting fear into the community here. It is an attempt to divide the group.
Casey, it's also our understandings that multiple students received suspension notices, and these students may have been the individuals communicating with the faculty. Can you update?
Just around 20 minutes ago, multiple students received notices of suspension. Quite a few people have. There are a few students who have received suspension notices, and a few of them are currently within the same hall. A lot of the people that were talking with admin in the voluntary meeting that they had yesterday around 4, a lot of people that were talking directly to admin have been suspended. So I believe that that meeting not only was in bad faith and trying to pacify and create committees from students and direct the energy of this movement into something less productive, but that it was a deliberate attempt to have footage that captured the likeness of those who cared most about this and actually wanted to talk to admin. I'm a student here myself. I'm in my junior year, and I would like to finish my degree. But due to the process of all of this, I have started to realize that perhaps this college and any other college within the California State University system is corrupt completely, and that there may not be a space for people who actually want to see change in the world within universities, at least change that is as revolutionary as this activity has been. It's a little bit depressing, but it is what I am seeing. And repercussions in that way mean that maybe I don't finish my degree here. Maybe I choose to leave. And I feel like a lot of students around me right now are having to come to that realization as well.
As clear and concise as possible, can you outline the list of demands and what a best case scenario looks like?
Best case scenario is that the CSU system is abolished completely. But in terms of actual realistic demands, divulging all investment, all donors, and all investment of, let's say, a realistic one would be those who have a salary over $200,000 per year, would have to disclose their personal investments and what those might be. Because that is money that is coming from the students. That is money that has been taken out of my hands and has been given into theirs. And I feel like it is their obligation to disclose where all of that money is going towards. Is it going towards the military industrial complex? Is it going towards Israeli companies? I would like to know. And I feel like everyone here would also like to know. Another demand is either revision or complete abolition of the time, place, and manner policies the university has in place right now. Currently, the time, place, and manner policy is Cal Poly Humboldt. State that in order to protest, you have to, 1 week in advance, and a request to protest to the Dean of Students' office. The Dean of Students here at Cal Poly Humboldt's name is Mitch Mitchell. Mitch Mitchell has previously called the cops on protesters. He is so new that we don't even have his salary information yet, and yet he has already become a thorn in our side. So you have to call the Dean, you have to request from the Dean of Students' office to protest 1 week in advance. If you do get the opportunity to protest and he has graced his hand upon you, you may protest without amplified noise only in the quad. The quad is the center of the university here. From the hours of noon to one. That is 1 hour where you are only allowed to speak without a megaphone if you have been approved 1 week in advance. I believe that if the California State University system is committed to your First Amendment rights, time, place, and manner policies is directly against that. And it shows that the California university system does not care about the First Amendment rights of students. So complete abolition, or at least extreme revision of the time, place, and manner policies is another one of the demands. Another demand is also, and it seems like they have already said that they are not willing to do this one, is amnesty for all protesters, students or community members, who have chosen to act in this way here on the university in the last few days.
A lot of activity has happened today with the extension of the campus closure, the quote-unquote checkout process, the suspension notices. What do you think comes next?
Honestly, I can only speak for myself in this matter and for all questions previous. I am one person, and in terms of this movement, there are common goals. But I believe a good amount of our strength is the fact that we all come from different purposes in this way. And for myself, the end game, the best possible end game for all of this is abolition of empire, is abolition of industrial society that perpetuates these kind of relationships between Israel and the U.S. between universities and cops, between our systemic issues of racism and classism. All of this is interconnected. That is why you see people mentioning Josiah Lawson. That is why you see people mentioning investment. That is why you see people angry at cops and almost everything, because it is all connected in this same way. So for me, the end goal is, while maybe not feasible, the complete abolition of all states.
We are getting a lot of banter on social media about this. What is your response to some of the things that people are saying?
I think the main one is something that, you know, I'm never going to convince these people that this is not what's happening, is that the claims that this is anti-Semitic in any way, shape, or form. I have multiple comrades here who are Jewish, and it is plainly obvious that this is not against Jewish people. This is against the state of Israel and their actions against those Palestinians. 34,000 Palestinians have been killed. Around three-quarters of the Palestinian population have been displaced. This is not about Jewish people necessarily in the ways of hate towards them. It is about rights. It is about the idea of Palestine as a place and as a people who get to exist. Another one that I think is happening was the idea recently that admin, especially higher up admin, including the chancellor, I believe, and some dean, had a, I'm unsure of where this came from, but there was a rumor circulating that there were students in Siemens Hall who had broken into the HR department and were rifling through records. And obviously, that's no good. That's not something that anyone wanted and that is not something that has happened. In fact, there has been explicitly a person placed at that door to make sure that no one messes with the HR department. And yet, still, even though admin was provided with a photo of this door showing that it had not been broken into, that no one had been in that room, they continued to use that excuse as a way to threaten us, as a way to say, I feel threatened, and therefore I'm going to call in police, or I am threatening to call in police. So that's one thing that just completely false. It is an excuse for admin to try and garner more police violence against all protesters here.
Casey, we covered a lot, but is there anything else critical for the public to know?
The joy here. I have met so many people that I will continue to have relationships with for the next multiple years and hopefully beyond. I have met people that I never would have beforehand. And in a space where we are faced with an incredible adversary, having people by your side that you know are with you is quite the incredible connection. And I don't think that's found a lot of other places. The joy of an autonomous zone here, where we have people volunteering at our MAK, our mutual aid kitchen. We have Food Not Bombs coming in every single day. Yet just yesterday, we served 25 pounds of potatoes. For an hour, there was a continuous line coming to get food. And all of that was for free. There is joy in having a space to sleep and having toiletries that you know don't come with a price tag, that you know come with community. We had a movie night. We watched, I believe it's called The Wanted 18, about cows in Palestine and also the Intifada in general back in the late 80s and early 90s. There is so much joy here that I think people don't realize because this movement is viewed as something violent. This is my community here, and I want to protect it, and they want to protect me.
Folks, again, you just heard the live edition of the K-Mud Local News. My name's Lauren Schmidt. I'm joined by
Lisa Music.
We are coming to you live from Studio B at the K-Mud headquarters. We had Ryan Burns at the Lost Coast Outpost, Kelly Lincoln of K-Mud and The Independent, Kiana Zanika, Lizard Queen, station manager of KRFH, and Aaron Donaldson of the California Faculty Association. Thank you all so much. Please go to humboldt.edu/emergency to see the list of demands from the protesters, the university's response. Campus is closed until May 10th, and we will continue to cover what comes next. Please stay safe and keep it tuned to The Mud or KRFH. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.